Welcome to Hubbub, the People's Podcast, where we engage our citizens and investors with the activities of the Planning and Code Administration and encourage everyone to contribute to Hagerstown's growth.
All right, so here we are, episode 31 of the Hubbub Podcast. Thank you all for joining us today. It's the first episode of the new year, and as you can see, we have a new co-host for the time being. This is Neighborhood Services Manager, Paul Folk. How are you doing today?
Oh, doing all right. Thanks for having me here. I hope I can fill Sean's shoes here. But
yeah, sad to see Sean go, but you know, we're on to a new year of the podcast, and I'm looking forward to it. So let's jump on into today's topic. And you know, this year it can be a nuisance to some people because you know, over the holidays, there's tasks that are to be done, you know, cleaned up from the holidays and before the winter weather sets in, which creates tasks such as shoveling, snow, as we discussed in our latest podcast. So, you know, this time of year, it gives a little bit people a little more to do around the house that they may not even be aware of.
Yeah, you're right. You're mentioning stuff about nuisances, and that is what actually today's episode is about, is nuisances. More specifically, nuisance abatements, but, you know, nuisances can be this time of year just like getting that live tree out of your house and needles are everywhere. So those things can be nuisances, but, you know, we're talking about nuisance abatements. So what is actually a nuisance abatement? And a nuisance abatement is a term used by building, fire, zoning, and property maintenance inspectors to improve the quality of life and resolve life safety issues within neighborhoods. These ordinances give the local government the authority to resolve quality of life issues and safety issues without having actually to obtain court authority. So it's allowing them to react very quickly to a situation to resolve anything that's in a neighborhood. Now, who actually determines what a nuisance is? That can always be, you know, determined by the local citizens sometimes for what they feel what is a nuisance, but it's actually how the ordinances and laws that are passed are what actually determines what a nuisance is in the ordinance. Things can be declared such as, you know, high weeds, sanitation items, vehicles, graffiti, structures, and the list can go on. It's just on what a local jurisdiction wants to deem as a nuisance. Always check with your local jurisdiction to understand, you know, what is deemed a nuisance in your area.
Yeah, and that's a lot of great information there. You know, these terms get thrown around. We use them all the time, but the general public may not understand what those mean. And one of the first things you might be asking is, you know, don't I have a say in the matter as a citizen that's affected by one of these laws? And the answer is yes, you really do. These laws have a due process, meaning that there are legal rights owed to you as the affected person. And before we discuss these types of laws, let's touch on the legal aspect of these laws. You know, we just mentioned due process. These laws fall under the procedural due process, meaning the affected person must be given notice, an opportunity to be heard, and a decision made by a neutral decision maker. As we mention often on these episodes, discuss these items with your local jurisdictions, or in this case, an attorney, if you want to understand your rights. We are clearly not attorneys here. Each jurisdiction varies on how the due process is achieved, and we could spend several podcasts on the different processes across the country, but we're not going to do that today. Here's what we do in Hagerstown. When a nuisance has been declared, a sworn inspector will issue a notice of abatement or abatement notice. The notice will be posted at the property in violation. It will be mailed first-class mail to the last known address for the owner. And we use the tax records with the state of Maryland to find these addresses. There is a deadline to correct the nuisance violation. This can vary between 1 day to 10 days. It just depends on the level of nuisance. The notice issued gives the owner the opportunity to appeal the notice to the Board of Code Appeals. This is a citizenry board made up of a licensed architect, licensed engineer, experienced in fire prevention or life safety, an attorney, and a licensed electrician, plumber, or contractor. And if an appeal is filed from a notice, a hearing will be scheduled to hear the facts of the violation. The board will then make a decision. The property owner and city will follow that ruling. Not every notice has a hearing, and if no appeal of the notice is filed, the city will follow the terms of the ordinance. This could mean the removal of items from the property or mowing of the lawn. The city will then bill for these services, and if the bill is not paid within an established timeline, the fees will be leaned on the property. as we've already said a couple times within this podcast, make sure you check your local jurisdiction on the appeal process, you know, where you live. Like we always say, we, you know, highly recommend taking care of these issues on your own, because it is a pricey bill if the city goes out and does it.
It can be something there. So it's great to know actually now what a nuisance is, and actually the due process that goes along with it, that, you know, so that you kind of understand that people have an opportunity to not always just have to immediately know the government's going to come in and do something. You do have the right to kind of declare certain things are not going to be abated through a process of an appeal through a board. You know, so now, you know, what items can actually be declared as a nuisance? Because we mentioned certain items, but what can actually be declared as a nuisance? Today, we're going to narrow the scope down just to three specific areas for this particular podcast. And the first one that we're going to, the ones that we're going to talk about are weeds and sanitation, unclaimed or abandoned vehicles, and graffiti. The first one we're going to talk about is the weeds and sanitation part, high weeds and sanitation. Now, this is one of the most common abatements across the country where, you know, weeds and sanitation can be cleaned up by local jurisdiction through an abatement ordinance. But, you know, what does that actually mean? So a local jurisdiction will determine, for example, the height limits for grass in your jurisdiction. Once the grass grows past a certain height, it is then declared a nuisance. I would like to say here in Hagerstown that we actually are able to spot these as soon as the threshold is passed for any high weeds, but that's just not the case. We do rely on our local citizens to help identify these properties with us. Even though we do patrol the areas, we can't always see behind fences or things of that nature. There might not be an alley that goes behind a property. So we do actually look for support from our local citizens to give us help with these.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times that, you know, we've gotten a concern called in at an address, and you go out there and realize how high the grass has actually gotten, just because you cannot see in all the areas. So we do rely on the citizens, as Paul said. So here in Hagerstown, the nuisance level for grass is 10 inches. And every jurisdiction is different. Here are a couple other examples around the country. So in Washington County, Maryland, where Hagerstown is, the county jurisdiction, it's 18 inches. Now, rural areas can have higher nuisance grass levels due to it being in an urban setting. In Baltimore, the largest city in Maryland, the grass height limit is 8 inches. Dallas, Texas has a 12-inch grass height limit. Los Angeles, California, it's the same as Baltimore. Grass is to be no more than 8 inches. This is mainly along the lines as fire hazards, as the fires out in California can be very detrimental. And lastly, in Pittsburgh, the height limit is 6 inches. So they're not messing around out in Pittsburgh, that's for sure. And there are timelines to abate or correct the violation before the jurisdiction steps in to mow the lawn. Here in Hagerstown, we give 7 days to correct the high weeds before we send a contractor in to perform the work. And this is on your first offense during a growing season. If it's your second offense during a growing season, that timeline goes down to 5 days. And any third or subsequent offense after that is shortened to 1 day. In Hagerstown, we shorten this timelines to protect the quality of life for the neighborhood and provide the response that the neighborhood wants, you know, these conditions be taken care of. And some of these timelines of jurisdictions that we just mentioned, like Washington County, where they had an 18-inch height limit, their time limit is they have to comply within 5 days of the notice and start by the fifth day and be completed by the 10th day. Pittsburgh only gives you 5 days to comply within the notice, and then Los Angeles, they have the right to issue an informal notice prior to a formal notice of abatement, and there's a pre-abatement hearing during that process. And, you know, we always recommend reach out to where you live. If you're not sure where, you know, what the height limit is in your area, just call your local jurisdiction. I'm sure they'll give you all the answers on that.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Always reaching out to the local jurisdiction for things. And Donnie went over a lot of great things for weeds, but then also we mentioned that this was a weeds, high weeds, and sanitation types of ordinances. So sanitation is anything that would be rubbish, garbage, trash, debris. It could be anything along those lines. It's always good, like Donnie had just mentioned, to make sure you know what each jurisdiction classifies as rubbish, debris, or trash, because each jurisdiction can be different. You know, here in Hagerstown, that if you have construction materials that are sitting on your property for 60 days that are being unused, that is declared debris and rubbish and therefore subject to an abatement. So it's always good to kind of know what local jurisdictions would actually determine what is one an item such as rubbish or garbage. Now, you know, if the jurisdiction does abate these things off your property, it's not free. We're not just taking these items away or mowing your lawn just for free. We will bill you for those types of services, and the local jurisdictions do this all across the country. And the fees can vary. They can be a few hundred dollars to thousands of dollars. It can be a very expensive abatement bill, so it's something certainly you wouldn't want to receive just a bill in the mail thinking that the city just took those items away for free for you. You know, it's always good to work with the local inspectors and officials to gain compliance. If someone is working on something and you're like, I just need a little bit more time, certainly always call someone. It's much easier to give an extension on something than it is actually just to go ahead and abate the stuff and deal with a bill after the fact. You know, but, you know, if these fees are not paid, you're just thinking, all right, I might not pay these fees because the stuff was taken off my property. I appreciate it, but I'm not going to pay the bill for this. Well, if the bill isn't paid, then the local jurisdiction can lien those fees against the property and then be part of your tax bill then. And then if you don't pay that portion of the tax bill, then it could go to tax sale and be sold at a tax sale. The property could be. So again, it's always very wise and take these things very serious. And we always recommend working with the local jurisdiction if you do have to receive a notice or a bill for this abatement services.
Yeah, no doubt about that. It's like I mentioned earlier, it gets pricey if the local jurisdiction comes out and does that work for you, not to be used as a contractor for those types of services. And I think after the first time, if somebody thinks that way and they get that bill, I think they'll quickly understand, you know, it's a lot more expensive going that route. So that's a lot of good information and definitely something to pay attention to. One of the other commonly abated violations is unclaimed or abandoned vehicles. And we're not talking about vehicles on the street. We're talking about vehicles that are abandoned on private property. These types of vehicles can be items that are collected on properties in the hopes for a future use, or maybe they inherited these vehicles and just don't know what to do with them. You know, they become an attractor of unwanted activities such as drug dealing, a place of refuge for the homeless, prostitution, vehicle theft, and much more. This type of activity deters from the quality of life in neighborhoods. Now, if these vehicles are in a fully enclosed garage, they're not typically a problem. You know, it's when these are parked on an exterior of a property exposed to the elements and many other activities.
And that's a real good point. We're not talking about the, you know, the classic car that you might have stored in your garage that you use occasionally for car shows, or it happens to be a car that you're just storing for, you know, to rehab later, that's actually inside of a garage. That is perfectly fine. What we're concerned about, what these communities are always concerned about, is the ones that are sitting out on the exterior that are subjected to any type of damage and theft and other items. So, you know, the ways that some of these jurisdictions have decided to protect areas for this type of activity is by adopting ordinances for nuisance vehicles. It's similar to the weeds and the rubbish vehicles, or I'm sorry, the weeds and rubbish violations. You know, the local jurisdiction has established some of the due process for the abating of the items. So it still is, the notice is issued, you have a certain timeline to comply, and then you always have your right to an appeal of the notice. And then after that time, then the notice is, or the abatement actually occurs from the notice. You know, each law varies state by state, but in general, the owner of the vehicle is identified along with the owner of the property where the vehicle is parked, and then these are notified for having a vehicle that's been abandoned. It can vary from place to place when it actually receives the notice. Some of the places, the notice just goes to the registered owner of the vehicle. In some places, it can actually just go to the owner of the property. And in other places, it can go to both of them, the owner of the vehicle and the owner of the property. And then, like we said, that there's an established time period for things, and Donnie's going to give us a couple examples of those, that what local jurisdictions can do. And then after a certain time period has elapsed, then the vehicle could be towed. Then the vehicle is then stored for either sale later or being claimed by the local tow agency. So it could just vary depending on the local ordinance.
Yeah, so as Paul mentioned, here's some examples from around the country. So in Wicomico County in Maryland, they have a nuisance abandoned vehicle ordinance. They first identify the abandoned or inoperable vehicle. They let the property owner know, and they have 30 days to remove the vehicle. If they fail to remove the vehicle, a tow company can remove the vehicle from the property. The tow yard must store the vehicle for another 30 days before the vehicle's interest rights are waived, and the vehicle can then be sold at a public sale. In Suffolk County, Virginia, they have a similar ordinance, but the timeline is 15 days to comply, and then the vehicle has 15 days to claim the vehicle before all rights are lost. And although this is used on the East Coast in some jurisdictions, on the West Coast, vehicle abatement on private property is very common. California appears to have some of the most aggressive vehicle abatement programs in the country. In Hesperia, California, they give a property owner 10 days to remove the vehicle, and then the vehicle is stored for 7 days before the rights are waived. So they're moving right along out in California. These were just some jurisdictions. The city of Hagerstown, we do not have a vehicle abatement program such as the ones listed. We can issue notices for abandoned or inoperable vehicles, which we often do. If the property owner does not remove the vehicle within the set time period, we can issue a civil citation for failure to comply, and then we'll go through the court system to seek to abate that. This process can take months or even up to a year, which can, it makes neighbors, very frustrated that, the city is not fixing these issues or that we don't care. And that's not the case at all. There's a good chance our department will be sharing research with our elected body in the future to address these abandoned vehicles.
That's a very good point, Donnie, because as we were doing the research for this podcast, and you start seeing how other jurisdictions are to address abandoned vehicles very quickly, you start to think, how could we maybe help Hagerstown with these types of concerns? Because I would say that weeds and sanitation complaints are usually our number one call, and then following up pretty close behind would definitely be vehicles. That is just something that we get a lot of calls about, that people are concerned about how these abandoned vehicles are just attracting nuisance things and not giving the neighborhood a better quality of life. And so, and one of the last things that we had talked about, and we were talking earlier of the different areas we were going to cover, is actually going to be graffiti abatement, which we mentioned that high weeds are one of our highest calls. Vehicles are right behind, and graffiti is right behind those. It is always one of those items we're getting calls about. And graffiti, what is graffiti? That is something that can be determined by local jurisdictions, but it's the defacement of public or private property by scratching, marking, carving, painting, or drawing. Now, I think, we can all agree that there is some very talented graffiti artists out there. I think we can all sit around and agree that and see some really good work that's being done. But if it's on unwanted areas by a property owner that didn't want the graffiti on their property, that's not the type of graffiti that is being desired by the community. So the goal of graffiti abatement programs is to keep the neighborhoods beautiful by removing unwanted graffiti and not going down a path of this broken window theory of where more graffiti just keeps on occurring in an area and it's not being taken off, and it just creates an environment that the neighborhood does not want to enjoy. So graffiti abatement is similar to the weeds and vehicles that we've talked about, that the notices are given, a deadline is established, there's a right to an appeal, and then there's corrective time to, or there's time to take corrective action. Either it's going to be by the property owner or the local jurisdiction. Now, there are other graffiti programs out there, and we're not going to really dive into those today, but this is where where you can call into a program coordinator to report graffiti on a property. And then there's a team that goes out and removes the graffiti, either by volunteers or contractors. It was kind of interesting while doing that research for this graffiti abatement to see these programs exist out there. And the cost for the removal can vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, because they're not always doing these for free. They might actually bill for it, or you can qualify for different things. And like I mentioned, we're not just really going to kind of discuss these types of programs here. We're going to talk about these ordinances that exist to remove graffiti off of properties in a timely manner so it doesn't create any more graffiti or any more blight in a community.
Yeah, and like you said, there's some really good graffiti out there that, you know, it's usually commissioned, you know, for a particular reason. But then there's some terrible stuff out there that looks like my two-year-old did it, or myself, you know. So it's good to have these programs in existence, as some places around the country already do. In College Park, Maryland, they do have an abatement program for graffiti. A property is identified with graffiti. They'll have an issue or a notice issued to the owner. The property owner then has 14 days to abate the graffiti. If the graffiti is on a residential property, a civil citation is issued, and the jurisdiction seeks court authority to abate the violation. But if the graffiti is on commercial property and not abated within at least 10 days, the jurisdiction can remove the graffiti and bill the property owner for the cost and time of materials. Bills that are not paid are then leaned against the property. In Portland, Oregon, they have a very extensive graffiti abatement program. They issue notices just the same as other jurisdictions. They will abate the graffiti from properties, but offer no cost or reduced cost graffiti removal assistance to residents, small businesses, and nonprofit organizations who meet that eligibility. If you do not meet those qualifications for their free or low-cost services, they list contractors a property could work with to remove that graffiti. In the city of Watsonville in California, they require graffiti to be removed within 72 hours or 3 days once it is placed. Their experience has shown that graffiti removed within 48 hours has proven to deter future graffiti. You know, I like that one a lot. It may seem like such a short amount of time, but as a, you know, the graffiti artist, you know, they might see like, oh, that hard work was just put in and they're removing it so fast. It's like, what's the point of continuing to do that? So I like that a whole lot. And one way to prevent graffiti in areas is through environmental design or SEPTED. We discussed SEPTED back in episode 16. So if you've not listened to that or that term seems unfamiliar, go give that episode a listen. There's some really good information in that one. Some examples to deter graffiti on areas is to prevent or plant fast-growing, low-maintenance bushes or trees along the sides of buildings. You could install lattice work, trellises with vines, and you could improve outside lighting and on public spaces. You know, you might want to consider commissioning murals. And graffiti creates a condition of blight within a community, which can result in deterioration of property values, business opportunities, and the enjoyment of life for patrons using adjacent and surrounding properties. So some good information there on what other jurisdictions are doing.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And like here in Hagerstown, like you mentioned that we have, you know, you can do murals on buildings and we actually paint clear coat stuff over top of it to try to deter graffiti off of those murals as well. So it just doesn't adhere to that, protecting the murals. And it's always a good idea to do that if you are having a mural in your community. And you know, we mentioned several abatement ordinances that are out there, and there are a number of different abatement ordinances, and it's always good to research them. But we came across one where they do abatements in one community if you have front yard clotheslines, which I couldn't believe that existed. It was so funny actually coming across that. I guess that community had problems with clotheslines in the front yard, but it is something that they have on the books. Or it could be one of those ordinances where it's just kind of been in existence in such a long time that it's still on the books and someone like us actually read it and couldn't believe it still exists. But always just check with your local jurisdiction to know what is permitted in your community and what is not. If you happen to receive an abatement notice, we always recommend calling the issuing inspector just so you can have a chat with them and discuss what are your options. You know, can you get some more time on stuff? You know, what would happen if you didn't comply? Just different things along those lines, because you don't want to receive a bill and for something that you might have had the opportunity to correct yourself, and then you're stuck with this big bill you have to pay to the city.
Right. Yep. Definitely good to pay attention to that stuff. Yeah, that clothesline makes me laugh. You know, it's just one of those things you just never thought about. And it's a good segue to our weird news story. I know this was our previous co-host Sean Brown's favorite part of the podcast, and I'm sure it's going to be Paul's favorite part as well. All right, so this one, the title of the article was Weed Abatement, Cause of River Fire. So this comes from Paso Robles in California. And this was a crazy one. So a landscaping contractor, they were abating weeds when they accidentally ignited a fire. And due to the high winds, the fire started spreading rapidly, but was eventually put out. But unfortunately, this fire destroyed 2 homes and damaged 9 structures. To get it under control, they needed 19 fire engines, 2 hand crews, 2 dozers, 3 air tankers, 1 air attack, and 1 helicopter. So I know we mentioned how Los Angeles has some of those stricter timelines for their grass or not letting it get above a certain height. This is a prime example of why, you know, you don't want that grass to be overgrown because of the fire. It's one of those weird news stories, but it's also a serious one. You know, something you want to pay attention to.
Well, that is a very weird news story there, and I'll say, although Sean liked it, you know, I've been a longtime listener, first time co-host of this podcast here. I do appreciate those weird news stories, so I found that very interesting, and I didn't believe that many units actually responded to that fire. That is a lot. So, you know, our next episode, we're going to be covering strategic demolitions. And what is this concept? You know, it's how, you know, what we'll do is we'll discuss how strategic demolition is used in communities to revitalize areas and spur economic growth. There's things that are occurring in Baltimore or that have occurred in Baltimore over the years that I'm aware of. We actually have some stuff here on the books in Hagerstown that you can use for historic district areas to actually, if it's for an economic development, you might be able to demolish an historic building just to try to spur some economic development. There are a lot of thresholds you have to go across, but we'll dive further into those details next episode.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. That's going to be a good episode. And while you're waiting on that next episode to come out, we have a huge library of podcasts at this point that you can look back on. You can find all of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, pretty much every podcast platform out there. If you'd rather just listen to us, you can do that. But if you want to continue watching us, you can find us on YouTube by searching for PCAD, City of Hagerstown, or the Hubbub Podcast will get you there as well. We are on Facebook by searching for PCAD, City of Hagerstown, Instagram. We also started some short videos on Instagram through their Reels platform and on TikTok. So you can find those by searching PCAD, PCAD, City of Hagerstown. A lot of good educational information out there. All right, so as we always do, we feature a musical guest at the end of our episodes to take us out. This month, we are featuring Fast Eddie and the Slowpokes. So this band consists of Ed Crowley, Dave Sherman, Tam Sullivan, and James Cook. And I heard James Cook's nickname is Cookie, so that's an interesting one. So these guys, they are 2017 semifinalists of the International's Blues Challenge, a 2013 Whammy-nominated Best Blues and Traditional R&B Group. They are a 2-time winner of the DC Blues Society Battle of the Bands in 2016 and 2012. They are 2-time participants in the International Blues Challenge in Memphis. You can find their music on Reverb Nation. They also have a Facebook page, and they're on Twitter by searching Fast Eddie Blues. And you can find them on YouTube as well. Some of the press that has come out about them, they're real pros both on and off the stage. And my favorite one, you will party when they play. So as we take out episode 31 of the Hubbub Podcast, we appreciate you tuning in on the new year now. And we look forward to spending 2022 with you. And now let's hear from Fast Eddie and the Slowpokes.